But right now, I'm very happy to welcome back to our program Bill Fletcher, Jr. He's a former president of Trans-Africa Forum, past vice president of the International Trade Union Development Programs at the George Meany Center of the AFL-CIO, a senior scholar with the Institute for Policy Studies, and an editorial board member at blackcommentator.com, and lots more. Bill's a lifelong activist, and we appreciate you making time to be on our program tonight, Bill. Thanks for being here.
It's my pleasure. Glad to be on the program.
So maybe we should start off with your overview of what we search for words to describe the current 2016 election campaign. Obscene is one word that comes to mind. Grotesque, bizarre, a lot of other words. Disturbing is another word I've come to use. But, Bill, there's more than just the shock value of Donald Trump and the things that have upended the political system. Maybe you could talk a little bit about some of the concerns and, we're going to get to the possible ways forward for the progressive movement in this country coming out of the 2016 election. But what do you see in front of us here as we approach November 8th?
The word that I have been using is it's scary. And it's scary because of the fact that Trump is, and his surrogates are playing with fire. And whether or not they understand the full ramifications of what they're doing is secondary, because they're building off of a flame that has been fueled since 1948 in one way or another by incredibly racist and opportunist forces in this country. And what has happened is that there are elements in the Republican Party that, particularly beginning in 64 and then certainly in 68, believed that they could tap into and harness the power of a right-wing populist movement, and that they could click it on and off as they needed it to. And the problem is right-wing populist movements do not lend themselves to being clicked on and off. When they are ignited, they start to take on a life of their own. But the Republican establishment really thought that they could control this. And that's, I think, what we're seeing, what we started to see during the primary season, that the Republican establishment figured out, wait a minute, you know, we launched this monster, we should be able to control it. But no, it now had a life of its own. And it was literally and figuratively Frankenstein's monster. Control. And what Trump has done is he's tapped into various kinds of angers, and I use that in a plural sense, that exist out there. It is a revolt against the future and a fear of everything. It's that combination. And that is what makes this scary, because then you add on to that guns. So in the... throughout the course of this primary season, and particularly since Trump got the nomination, he's been basically flirting with the possibility of something that comes very close to an armed insurrection. He flirted with the issue of an assassination of Hillary Clinton, and now he's been increasingly talking about that the election might be stolen, and that something will need to be done about that. And then you have his surrogates that suggest that it might, that something might need to be an armed action. And this is what makes this very scary. They're not just talking about mass protests or even civil disobedience. They're talking about weapons. And we have to understand that the right-wing populist movement has an armed wing and has for quite some time. So that makes this very, very scary, and it's why progressives need to be on alert. We need to make sure that these elections, that the voters are protected, that voter suppression is not permitted, that voter intimidation is not permitted, and we're going to have to stand firm, regardless of what the right wing does or tries.
Well said, Bill. Share some of your concerns here. And I wonder, as you look at the political landscape, how are the Republicans going to come out of this election? There's some school of thought that the GOP is really winnowed down to a hardcore racist and xenophobic element that marginalizes the party in the future. There's also the school of thought that Donald Trump and his supporters have a goal of creating a new media network to challenge Fox News for the extreme right. Hard to know how this is all going to come out. But when you look at the progressive movement that came out of the primaries with Bernie Sanders really articulating for the first time in many decades an agenda that was quite popular among Democrats and a good cross-section of people across the country, have you taken some hope from that a larger coalition of progressive interest groups can come together to make a difference in the coming years in U.S. politics?
Well, let me start with the Republicans for a second and then go to what I think is the good news. I think that the Republicans are currently engaged in a civil war. That is their own civil war. I think it's going to be very difficult for them to come out of this election season and simply shake hands and say everything is fine. In part because Trump's base actually hates the Republican establishment, or much of it at least. And so I think that it's quite possible that there'll be some sort of fragmentation of the Republicans, even though the Republican Party has become a hard right-wing party, even before Trump. I mean, when you look at the clowns that were in the Republican primary, I mean, it wasn't that Trump was extreme. It was actually that they were all very similar when it comes down to it. It's just that Trump was very crude in his approach, and he was different on certain policy things. So I think it's very possible that we're going to see some sort of fragmentation. I'm not sure whether it will result in a separate party, but I think certainly fragmentation. Now, with the Democrats, I think that Sanders could have won the nomination had he early on run to win from the very beginning and situated himself much more among communities of color. I think that he made a terrible strategic mistake in the beginning, both by not clearly running to win, but more running to pressure Hillary. But the other thing was more serious, which is that he doesn't get the centrality of race in the United States, and he doesn't get the particular significance, certainly in the Democratic Party, of the African-American and Latino electorate, and increasingly Asians. And I think it was a strategic mistake, because I actually think that he could have captured the nomination. Now, whether he could have won or not, I don't know, because I think had Sanders gotten the nomination, there would have been red baiting, the likes of which we haven't seen in a very long time. So, you know, one never knows and how people would react to that. But the other thing that was marvelous was the mobilization of so many younger people. So here's what I would say. After November, no matter who wins, for progressives to go forward, there will need to be a state by state strategy that aims at fighting for power. It cannot be, let's go back home and wait for 4 years, even 2 years, and then do something. It's got to be in early 2017, we need to start going in every state, bringing together the various strands of the progressive movement that are willing to work inside and outside of the Democratic Party. And what that means is those people that say, forget the Democrats, let's just form a third party, you basically say to them, you know, we'll agree to work with you on any number of things, but we're not going to waste our time debating this. And so the people that are prepared to work inside and outside the Democratic Party need to forge a united front in their states and begin thinking very carefully about what needs to be done to capture the state houses, build up a presence in Congress and the Senate. So it's a long-term process, but I think it's eminently doable, and particularly when you see the people that mobilized around the Sanders campaign. Now, a final point about this is that it cannot rely on Sanders. Sanders will hopefully be an inspirational figure, a major inspirational figure for this. But people cannot sit back and wait for directions from him. That was one of the mistakes after the Kucinich campaign. It was certainly a mistake after the Jackson campaign in 1988, the over-reliance on one person. We're going to have to dig in each of our states, and I mean a 50-state strategy. No question, it's not about so-called blue states and red states. As far as I'm concerned, it's got to be 50 states.
Well put. And Bill, I just would add to what you're saying with the specific information about organizations that have spun off the Sanders campaign, and that's Bernie Sanders' own sort of husbandry of the Our Revolution group raising money for candidates, as has a new group called Brand New Congress, which is raising money for the 2018 interim election coming up for two years from now. So, and they're trying to tap into the grassroots network that was so successful in raising lots of money for Sanders. That was a real, certainly a huge part of how close he got to winning the nomination.
That's correct.
I wanted to ask you, Bill, as someone who has spent many years in the labor movement, what role do you think the labor movement should be playing here in the post-election environment, given the fact that a lot of things are in flux? And certainly the labor movement, unlike many other elements in the progressive universe, has a lot of capacity to do a lot of very constructive things.
Right.
And we could see that in, you know, some of the things that have been done by groups like National Nurses United, Roseanne DeMauro, and a lot of other great people there, really agitating to bring the progressive movement together and work in a very strategic way in electoral politics.
Well, let's start with what they did wrong, the mistake that was made. The mistake that was made in this electoral season was that too many unions immediately jumped on the Clinton bandwagon without a full debate within their ranks and without looking at the reality that the real candidate for the working people was, without question, was Bernie Sanders. I mean, simply without question. And when I saw some unions, including those that claim to be very progressive, jump onto the Clinton bandwagon with very little hesitation and with all kinds of arguments that were close to sophistry, I thought it was ridiculous. It was a very big mistake. Those unions that encouraged debate within their ranks, that was a very different matter. And there was great work by unions, as you mentioned, National Nurses United, the Communication Workers of America, American Postal Workers Union, and several others that stepped forward, had debate, backed Sanders, and really did great work. I think that that's an example. I think that the lesson here is that the members are not stupid, nor are they puppets. There are diverse views within the ranks, and we've got to give voice to them. We've got to provide mechanisms and moments for people to have an honest debate. And, you know, to really look at the candidates, study their platforms, et cetera. I think that that's one thing I would say coming out of this. A second thing is that we need the unions to unite with the kind of statewide effort I'm describing. I mean, in addition to the organizations you mentioned, there are local and statewide organizations and some other national organizations. There's Progressive Democrats of America. In the state of Virginia, there's a great group called New Virginia Majority, in Florida, the New Florida Majority, that have been operating on the ground trying to build up a progressive constituency. And I think that organized labor can play a role in helping to pull these forces together as a popular bloc that can do battle. And these state battles and municipal battles are incredibly important. One of the things that is getting very little discussion is that there is a right-wing strategy out there that aims specifically at establishing or calling for a constitutional convention. That is a federal constitutional convention where they wish to change the U.S. Constitution. And they're approximately 6 to 8 states away from such a call. And that means that we progressives have to win back these state houses. And you're not going to win these state houses back by simply a national demonstration every April or mobilizing once every 4 years around a presidency. We've got to do some hard work, and the union movement can play a major role in that. The final thing is that in order to do any of this, and this was the theme of the book that Fernando Gapacin and I co-authored, Solidarity Divided, is that the union movement needs to transform itself. It really needs to rethink its mission and to become to gain as a central component of its mission the fight for social justice and not simply wages, hours, and working conditions for those people that we happen to represent. So I'm confident that that can be done at least by a significant number of unions, maybe not everybody. But I'm absolutely confident that it can be done, in fact, because it must be done.
We're speaking with Bill Fletcher, Jr., a former president of Trans-Africa Forum, vice president, past vice president of International Trade Union Development Programs at the George Meany Center of the AFL-CIO, lifelong social justice and labor activist. Bill, just a final question for you here, and that revolves around Donald Trump has attracted a hardcore extreme right group of supporters. But he's also reached a number of people who are attracted to some of his populist rhetoric, phony populist, if you will, but certainly mm-hmm. his railing against free trade and some other issues that he's talked about has attracted folks who aren't happy with the status quo. How does the progressive movement reach out to some of these folks whose real kind of root support for Trump is not based in racism, but in their dissatisfaction with the economic environment here that they feel has been screwed up by the elites in both political parties?
Well, there's two answers to that. And one, I start with by saying that Trump supporters may not all be racist, but they are looking at the crises that they face through the lens of race. And by that I mean that people are suffering, and white people particularly are not really used to the kind of suffering that they're going through right now as the living standard has been declining since the mid-1970s. And what Trump's form of populism, right-wing populism, does is it gives voice to that by basically saying, yes, you are being hurt. And then there are coded words and coded terms that place the blame on Jews, on immigrants, on Muslims, on African-Americans, Latinos, etc. So it's the lens of race that Trump supporters have that has to be taken off. And what that means is that progressives, going specifically to your question, our response has got to be audacity. It's got to be audacity. It's got to be a willingness to call things actually as they are, that's the way we respond. And that we've got to come up with suggestions that are to the point,
well,
sorry, I lost you.
Okay, no.
We've got to come up with suggestions that are radical, that are speaking to the concerns of working people, that are not pulling punches, that are not compromising with neoliberalism, that is speaking to the, you know, what is destroying people, and comes up with proposals. And that's where we differ from Trump. We can actually come up with proposals that are civilized, that are audacious, that are transformational.
Bill, thank you so much. I appreciate you being here tonight, and I'd very much like to speak with you after the election to explore these lines of thought a little bit more, and how some of these suggestions are being put into action already, and some that still need to be better formulated. But thank you so much for sharing your thoughts on strategy for the progressive movement after this election.
My pleasure. And I look forward to that discussion after the election. And let's hope that the wrong person doesn't win.
Yeah, let's hope that. And, Bill, is there any website you want to refer? I know you have a website.
Sure.
Tell
My
us how to find it.
My website is BillFletcherJr.com. I'm also on Twitter and Facebook.
Okay. Great to talk with you, Bill. Thanks so much for making time for us.
Take care. Bye-bye.
That's Bill Fletcher, Jr., again, a former president of Trans-Africa Forum, past vice president for international trade union development at the AFL-CIO, senior scholar with the Institute for Policy Studies, and an editorial board member at blackcommentator.com.